Okay, so last time we were talking about the Fisher matrix, which is a tool for statistical forecasting. To draw an abstract picture, suppose I have some model space of parameters that I want to constrain. And I have a specification for data that I'm going to analyze to determine the parameters. But I haven't actually done the experiment yet. I don't have a realization of the data. I do have a preferred fiducial model around which I want to determine the confidence regions, or around which I want to do the forecast. Then, under a certain set of approximations that we talked about last time, most importantly, that the posterior likelihood is approximated as a Gaussian. The Fisher matrix is easy to define in a general way and gives a prediction for what the covariance of that Gaussian will be, which is all that you need to know to draw ellipsoids and determine confidence regions. And the general formula is that I take the log of the conditional probability. That's a function of the data and the parameters theta. Take its matrix of second derivatives. And then take an expectation value over realizations of the data. I have to take that expectation value because I don't have a particular preferred realization. So for example, the Fisher matrix is actually the inverse of the covariance matrix of the posterior. So for example, if this were a one-dimensional problem, there were a single theta parameter, so that in the Fisher approximation, the posterior is a Gaussian, then the width of that Gaussian, the one sigma error, would be the square root of its variance. Which is, in the one by one case, the covariance matrix is just a single number, the variance, but there's this inverse. So 1 over square root f in the one dimensional case is the forecasted error on the parameter. Now, we've talked about a couple of examples so far, and now I want to consider example 3, which is how accurately can the variance of a Gaussian be measured? Suppose that I have a Gaussian distribution whose mean is known to be zero and whose variance is unknown. And I want to determine it. And suppose that I have n random samples from the Gaussian. So I just draw n random samples, and I have some numbers that I can think of as living here on the x-axis. So the data here is n random samples. And the model will have a single parameter. I always like to denote the model parameters by theta, so let's just rename the variance sigma squared 2 theta. Let's compute the Fisher matrix and see. So it's clear that there's some statistical error, some accuracy with which we can estimate this width given a finite number of samples, and that error will decrease with n. Let's run the Fisher matrix machine and compute. So I'm going to compute the one by one Fisher matrix in this one dimensional space. And the first thing that I need to do is to write down the conditional likelihood of the data given the model. The data D here is the set of numbers xi. there are n, to write down the probability of getting a particular set of values xi, those are independent, so I just multiply together their probabilities. And each of those probabilities is just given by the formula for a Gaussian probability distribution in one dimension. The square of the 1/2. I'm going to write it. I guess I'm calling sigma squared theta. 2 theta. Then let's say I'll take the log. Now, in a previous example where the Gaussian PDF appeared, this constant could be dropped. This normalizing prefactor could be dropped. But here it's important because it has a theta dependence, and theta is the parameter that we're interested in. So this prefactor can't be treated as a constant in this example. But of course, the 2 pi can, so I won't write that. And then I'll write minus 1/2. When I take the log, oh, there are n factors of theta to the minus 1/2. And then when I take the log here, I get the sum over I of xi squared over. OK. Now I want the second derivative. I'm just turning the crank to compute the Fisher matrix, d theta squared. So in this term, I get n over 2 times theta to the minus 2. And here I get a factor of, the sign stays the same, and I get a factor of 2. So 1 over xi squared theta to the minus 3. Now, to compute the Fisher matrix, so far all of these expressions have been for a fixed realization of the data xi. Now, when I compute the Fisher matrix, I want to average over realizations of xi. So I'll write the minus sign out here. I'll leave the minus sign in front. I have to take the average. In the first term, there's nothing to average. There's no dependence on the data xi. In the second term, the expectation value of each xi squared is the variance of xi, or that is to say theta. And there are n of them, so I get an n theta here when I take the average, times theta to the minus 3. And this gives n over 2 times theta to the minus 2. That's the 1-by-1 Fisher matrix. To answer the original question, the statistical error on theta, sometimes we use the notation sigma in statistics to mean statistical error on. In one-dimensional problems, the statistical error is 1 over the square root of the Fisher matrix. So that gives square root of 2 over n times theta. The statistical error is proportional to theta, which makes sense because everything here is scaled by the variance of the distribution. So it makes sense that if I had n random samples, that I would measure the variance with some fractional error. And that fractional error turns out to be the square root of 2 over n. Now, this is an important formula in statistics that you can derive in other ways. For example, another way of deriving it is, which is more of a frequentist method, would be to take xi 1 over n xi squared, which is sort of like an estimate for the variance, and then compute the variance of this. You can evaluate that variance using Wick's theorem, and you get 2 over n times theta squared, which is consistent with the Fisher matrix result. But it's fun to see it come out of a Bayesian approach or come out of the Fisher matrix. Now, let's think about this question. How accurately can the CMB power spectrum CL be measured? This is actually the same question in disguise. From our discussion of spherical harmonics a couple of lectures before, the CMB consists of when you take the spherical harmonic transform, the CMB map is a sequence of numbers ALM. And just to illustrate that this is a completely concrete thing, you can download, for example, the Planck maps and find that A20 is 13.09 micro K. A21 is, there's a 1 over, I'm going to put a 1 over root 2 in front for some reasons of my pet notation, which aren't very important. 3.54i micro K. Remember that AL0 was real, but ALM for M greater than 0 was complex, and so on. You can think of a CMB satellite as just a machine that goes up, and what it sends down is this list of numbers for every L and M. And the only property of these harmonics that we need to know to answer this question is that the different L's are independent, the different ALMs are independent of each other. Just like in Fourier space, the modes of a Gaussian random field are always independent of each other, statistically independent of each other. This is just the same statement for modes on a sphere. And there are 2 L plus 1 modes or M values for a given L. So when we measure the CMB power spectrum, when we estimate C2, we just look at the A2Ms. When we estimate C3, we just look at the A3Ms and so on. Each of the CLs are estimated independently. So you can think of this as a bunch of independent 1D questions. And if I'm asking how well CL can be measured, well, each of the ALMs is just a Gaussian random number with variance CL. So I'm just asking this question. The ALMs are some samples of a Gaussian with some unknown width, CL to the 1/2. And the answer is that the statistical error is the square root of just by replacing n by 2L plus 1 and replacing theta by CL. And this is a fundamental result. It means that when we measure the CMB power spectrum, each L was measured independently, and the statistical error goes down with L. It decreases roughly as 1 over root L. Now, the statistical error here is arising because there are just a finite number of, suppose I'm interested in the quadruple. Its error bar is pretty large. Its fractional size is, its 1 sigma error bar has fractional size, square root of 2/5. And the 2 sigma error bar would be twice as large and so on. So it's not very well measured. And the reason it's not very well measured is because if I told you that I had a Gaussian and I don't know what it's with, but I have five random samples, and that's all the information that you'll ever have from which to infer the width, and you have a very limited ability to say what the width is. And this is a really fundamental problem in cosmology called cosmic variance. It means that one thing that has attracted a certain amount of attention is the fact that in our CMB sky, the quadrupole appears to be low at about 2 sigma. What that means is that the probability of getting a ALMs on our sky that are as low as our observed quadrupole is only about 5%. And one may wonder if that's a statistical fluke, or if, one possible explanation is that it's a statistical fluke. Our universe is a little, we got a little bit lucky or unlucky in our realization of the universe. If we were to restart the initial conditions of the universe, we would repeat the experiment, we wouldn't get this. Or if we were to measure the CMB, if another observer in a different Hubble patch were to measure the CMB, they wouldn't see this. We have no way of knowing, because these five modes are all that we can ever measure. If it were particle physics, say, or pretty much any other field of physics, and we did an experiment and got a 2-sigma anomaly, we could just run for longer, take more data. But in cosmology, we can't. We only have one sky, and so we're stuck with this forever. This problem of cosmic variance is annoying. It's a problem that's sort of unique in cosmology, that you can get stuck with an anomaly, and you can never take more data because there's only one universe to measure. Just for fun, I was trying to think of an example of another science where the same problem might exist. It's hard to think of one. The only example I could think of would be like maybe evolutionary biology, where there are only a finite number of fossils in the fossil record. So there's some, even if you dug up all the fossils on Earth, there would be some finite accuracy with which you could reconstruct what happened. I guess this problem is really what the two examples have in common is that they're both like historical sciences. The A2Ms are like the fossils of our universe. There is also, in the real CMB power spectrum, cosmic variance isn't all there is to the story. Well, our analysis here has assumed that the ALMs are samples from some Gaussian with an unknown width, but they come in without statistical errors. And what happens in a real experiment is that there's some noise. A given ALM might be determined to be some number plus or minus some statistical error. And that increases the errors. The noise turns out to have the property that the noise contribution to the error bar is pretty negligible at low L, and then kicks in at high L. So what you see in the real data is error bars that get smaller. They follow this cosmic variance rule. And then until at some point they start blowing up when the instrumental noise kicks in. By the way, the main reason for that, scaling, the fact that the noise is important at high L, derives from the fact that the CMB power spectrum is roughly flat if the quantity L squared CL gets plotted. It's flat in the sense that I'm ignoring all the interesting acoustic structure, but just the gross scaling in L of the CMB is roughly L to the minus 2. Whereas noise, we actually studied the example of white noise or contributions that are uncorrelated from one place to the other, and found that the power spectrum of white noise was constant. Roughly the way it works is that the power spectrum of the CMB falls off as 1 over L squared, and the power spectrum of the noise is constant. And so the CMB power is larger at low L, cosmic variance dominates. At high L, the noise power spectrum eventually becomes larger, and measurement noise in the instrument dominates the error bars. Got a little sidetracked there, but I thought it was interesting to say. So just remember that this formula is the cosmic variance contribution to the error and does not include the noise contribution that you would get at high L in a real experiment. I keep forgetting to send an email. Ah, I knew that was going to happen. I keep forgetting to send an email to say that this board is broken. Okay. Now, here's an even more fun Fisher matrix. Let's compute the... Let's ask the question, how well can the cosmological parameters, say the 6 parameters of the cosmological standard model, be measured from the CMB? This is going to be a Fisher matrix forecast with where the model consists of the 6 parameters of the cosmological standard model. Theta is a 6 component vector. And the data are the CMB multipoles ALM, which I'm going to assume in this example are measured without noise. So this would just be the, what I'm going to end up computing is just the cosmic variance contribution to the statistical errors on the cosmological parameters. And I'm actually going to do a tutorial where I have you guys derive the form of the Fisher matrix with noise. Now, the way that we do these forecasts is we use a code as a black box where we, well, we try to understand what's in the black box because it's hard to get the forecast right if you're just using it strictly as a black box. But in theory, you can use it as a black box. A code where you put in cosmological parameters and out comes the power spectrum CL as a function of those parameters. And there are a few codes in use. There's a piece of software called CAMB, which is what I'm used to. There's a piece of software called Class, which is what I hear all the cool kids are using these days, and a few others. We can also, using the black box, and this software is very complicated. These are, you know, on the order of 100,000 lines of code to integrate all of the differential equations that compute the power spectrum from a set of cosmological parameters, including some really difficult physics, like the atomic physics of line transitions at the end of recombination is important. There's a lot of messy atomic physics in here. Or the gravitational lensing effect of structure in the universe, well after the CMB is formed, gravitationally lensing the CMB and changing the power spectra. Many, many physical effects need to be computed to compute the power spectra to the needed accuracy. If we have this black box, then another thing that we can compute is the derivative of CL with respect to a cosmological parameter. And the way that you do that is by finite differencing. You just run, you choose a step size. Have the black box compute the power spectrum with a step, and without the step, and then divide by the step size. It's, my conscience won't let me write this equation down without mentioning that it's a lot more numerically stable to do two-sided differencing like this. So The point is just that I want you to imagine that we have a way of computing numerically the power spectrum for a given set of cosmological parameters and the derivative of the CMB power spectrum with respect to any parameter you like. I'm going to give a formal expression for the Fisher matrix in this six-parameter space in terms of these quantities. Now, one thing that just, I want to make a minor change in notation, and this isn't standard, but I personally find it sort of confusing to have complex numbers appearing in the likelihood. So I'm just going to make this minor change of notation. I'll define A tildes like this. And this is for m between 1 and l. The point is that for each l, the a tilde i's are 2l plus 1 real Gaussian random numbers, which are independent. So they're their covariance would look like this. It's just less confusing to say the CMB consists of 2L plus 1 Gaussian distributed real numbers than 2L plus 1 Gaussian distributed complex numbers with a conjugation rule that relates the minus m's to the positive m's. So with that minor change of notation, let's calculate the Fisher matrix. So to calculate the Fisher matrix, I want to start. Remember, the Fisher matrix in these parameters is always minus the probability of getting a certain data or CMB realization or set of multipoles A tilde given a set of cosmological parameters. So I want the second derivative of the log likelihood with respect to the parameters. And then I take the expectation value over the data, that is the CMB multipoles. That's the Fisher matrix. So let's start working it out. First off, what's the probability of getting a CMB sky A tilde given a set of cosmological parameters? So once the cosmological parameters are specified, the power spectrum is determined, and then every A tilde is a Gaussian random variable with some variance, and they're all independent. So the probability of getting a big sequence of A tildes is just the product of the probabilities of the individual A tildes. And that is a Gaussian likelihood. There's just a lot of factors, since I'm multiplying for every L, and then for each of the 2L plus 1 multipoles at a given L, I'm multiplying one factor of the Gaussian likelihood. This example is really pretty similar to the one we just did. The only difference is that there's a product over L sitting in front. And the CLs are now understood to depend on some smaller set of parameters. All right. Now, if you calculate, oh, I'm going to raise this board. I wanted to take the log of this equation. By the way, in general, this would be expected to be, this probability would be expected to be a function of both a tilde and theta. And I just want to remind you that the theta dependence is hidden in CL here. Now I want to take that expression and oh, I see there's some typos in my notes. I better think.
Wouldn't we have a 2 in the explanation with CL?
Oh, you're absolutely right. Thanks. Okay. Now, it's pretty straightforward to take the log of this and take the second derivatives with respect to theta. Remembering that CL is a function of theta, so whenever it gets differentiated, I'll just get a factor of this partial derivative. And there are also second partial derivatives of CL which appear, although those will turn out to go away in the final Fisher matrix, but they'll appear in this intermediate expression. So let me just write down what you get. After a little algebra, it's pretty straightforward to get this. Now, to get the Fisher matrix, I'm using, by the way, indices A, B to denote indices in the six-parameter space. I want to take the expectation value of this over realizations of the data, that is to say, C and B sky A tilde. So I just go through, I'll leave the minus sign in front. I'll just go through term by term and take that expectation value. Here I get, when I take the expectation value of A tilde squared, I get a CL, and there are 2L plus 1 terms in the I sum, so I get this. And then here, I forgot the sum over L. Let me put it here. Here I'll get minus 2 plus 1 over 2. In the first term, there's nothing to take the expectation value of. And in the second term, I again get 2L plus 1 CL in the numerator. Okay. And I see that I get a cancellation here. And here, oh, I forgot a 2 here. I seem to have a disease of dropping factors of 2. So here, I get a cancellation. Here, this term is twice this term. So putting it in with the leading minus sign, I get sum over L, 2L plus 1 over 2, 1 over CL squared, derivative of CL with respect to theta A, derivative of CL with respect to theta B. And this is a formula. So this is the final formula for the Fisher matrix. And this is a formula that I can guarantee you that every CMB cosmologist would know by heart. What it says is the following. Suppose that you want to forecast the ability of a CMB experiment to constrain a certain set of cosmological parameters. I take my black box code, and I evaluate CL at my fiducial model. Remember, the Fisher matrix is always a fork, is always a function of some assumed fiducial model. So I run the black box code once to compute CL. Then for each parameter in my forecast, I do this finite differencing trick to numerically compute the derivative of the CMB power spectrum with respect to each parameter. So that would be, in this example, 12 runs of the code to compute each parameter derivative numerically by two-sided differencing. Then once I have those numbers computed, those power spectra as arrays in L, I evaluate this L sum, and that gives me a 6x6 matrix. That 6x6 matrix tells me everything that I need to know about the ability of the experiment to constrain the six cosmological parameters. It describes 6x6 matrix, or rather its inverse, describes the covariance of the error ellipsoid in the six-dimensional space. And so any question I want to ask about how different parameters are constrained or how they correlate with each other can be answered by some sort of projection of that six-dimensional Gaussian likelihood down to a smaller dimensional space. I was thinking I would do a tutorial tomorrow where I actually have you guys compute this for a realistic set of CMB experiment specifications like WMAP and compare to the actual error bar supported by the experiment. I'm getting towards the end of everything that I wanted to say about statistics. Now that we have a bunch of examples of the Fisher matrix, I want to talk about it a little more abstractly. It's actually a very interesting object. So here's a statement that I won't prove yet. I'll come back to it later and give a proof. But it'll give you some intuition for how to work with these matrices. Suppose that you compute a Fisher matrix in a two-dimensional parameter space. And you find that the off-diagonal element of the matrix is non-zero, so that the posterior is correlated. You might consider two notions of the statistical error on the parameter theta 1. There's this error, and then there's this error. And those two error bars would correspond to a situation where you were treating the parameter theta 2 as known, that is fixed to its fiducial value, or floating, that is free to float as you change theta 1 and check for consistency with the data. Sometimes the word marginalized is used as a synonym for floating. So this bottom error bar would be the marginalized error on theta 1. And this would be, let me write it as the error on theta 1 with theta 2 marginalized. In the Bayesian picture, marginalization corresponds to integrating out variables. If I integrate out theta 2 to get a 1D likelihood for theta 1 that I'm marginalizing. And if I slice, then I'm treating theta 2 as fixed. So this error bar is the error on theta 1 with theta 2 held fixed. Now here's the interesting fact that I want to tell you about 2D linear algebra, that this error, remember in the one-dimensional case, the size of the error bar is just 1 over square root f. In the two-dimensional case, there are these two notions of error bar, and they correspond respectively to this. So if I want to compute this error bar, I invert the Fisher matrix. I take its 2 by 2 matrix inverse. And then I take the 1, 1 element of that matrix. And then I raise that to the 1 half power. If I want to compute this error bar, which is always smaller, then what I do is I take the 1, 1 element of the Fisher matrix and raise it to the minus 1 half power. So the question is where you put the inverse, whether you take the matrix inverse before you extract its matrix element, you invert it in the matrix sense, or whether you take the element of the matrix without inverting it and then put the inverse up here. More generally, in an n-dimensional space, this error bar, if I invert the entire n by n Fisher matrix, extract a diagonal matrix element. Let me write this out. In an n-dimensional space, if I invert the Fisher matrix and compute its, and then take its diagonal element, then this thing, or rather this thing, square root, is the error on parameter I with the other parameters marginalized, but is either integrated out of the likelihood or free to float. And if I take the diagonal element of the Fisher matrix without inverting it and raise it to the minus 1 half power, this is the error on parameter I with the remaining parameters held fixed to their fiducial values, assumed to their fiducial values. In the Bayesian framework, this might happen if you had a prior that was constraining them to be equal to their, or nearly equal to their fiducial values. Okay. I'll come back to this and prove it later after I talk about some more general properties of the Fisher matrix. So here's a general property of the Fisher matrix. If I have two independent experiments, for independent experiments. The experiments are understood to share the same model space, theta. Then the Fisher matrices just add. And that's easy to see formally if you think about the definition of the Fisher matrix. If the data in this case were to consist of two independent subsets, d prime and d double prime. And the probability of getting a given pair, the experiments are independent, so that the probability of getting a given pair is just the product of their respective probabilities. Then when I plug this into the Fisher matrix, the log will convert this product into a sum. And you just see right away that this is the sum of the two Fisher matrices. So that's one formal property. You might imagine, oh, I forgot to say, I was going to say more about this situation of marginalizing versus fixing. Suppose you're interested in an intermediate case where I want to fix some subset of the variables and marginalize the rest. Then you can figure out what to do based on these rules. So what you do is you first take the set of variables which are assumed fixed, and you drop those rows and columns from the Fisher matrix. In other words, if I'm fixing k variables and marginalizing n minus k of them, n minus k minus one of them, I would start by dropping the corresponding k rows from the Fisher matrix so that I have an n minus k dimensional matrix. Then I would take its n minus k dimensional inverse and read off the matrix element on the diagonal. That would give me the Fisher matrix element with k parameters fixed and n minus k minus 1 parameters marginalized. In general, in some big parameter space, you can always fix, you can always just remove some variables from the model and marginalize others. The Fisher matrix tells you everything you need to know. So imagine that you know that property, and you also know this property that independent experiments add. And let's imagine that you're like a large funding agency, and you're trying to decide which big experiment to do next. What you might do is make like a database of every Fisher matrix. First, you choose the largest model space that you'd ever be interested in. So I take these, the six cosmological parameters of the standard model, and then I add neutrino mass, the dark energy equation of state, gravity, cosmological gravity waves, and so on, every interesting parameter to make like a 20 parameter space. That's more parameters than I can actually constrain at once, but that's okay. I know how to fix variables or remove them from the forecast just by replacing the Fisher matrix by an appropriate submatrix. I pre-compute a bunch of Fisher matrices for every experiment that's already been done. So, you know, Planck is here, maybe SDSS is here, another famous experiment that measures the power spectrum of galaxies, and so on. And then if I want to know, given that these experiments have already been done, how interesting is some new experiment? I just add it to the total Fisher matrix of the universe, so to speak. I take that 20 by 20 matrix, and then I do whatever slicing and marginalizing I need to forecast and make plots for interesting cosmological parameters. And I can decide which experiment is adding the most new information. Of course, if you're the director of a funding agency, you don't do this yourself. You could assemble like a task force to do it, but this really happens. Or if you're thinking about designing an experiment, there are a bunch of parameters that you might adjust, a bunch of designs you might consider. Like in the CMB, you might ask, is it better to have more detectors and reduce the noise? Or is it better to spend money on a larger telescope and have better angular resolution? You just compute the Fisher matrix in both cases, compute your error ellipse, do your forecasting procedure, and then depending on which question you think is the most interesting, which cosmological parameter you're most interested in, you can decide. So the Fisher matrix is a really important thing that's used all the time. Here's one. So this is one general property. There are even more interesting general properties of the Fisher matrix that I'm going to tell you about. Here's one. Suppose that I reparameterize the model space. Let's say behavior of the Fisher matrix under reparameterization. If I think of theta as being some abstract coordinates on a model space, then I can change variables to some other parameter set of coordinates theta prime. Then you can compute the Fisher matrix in both sets of parameters. And there's a general theorem that says that the two Fisher matrices are related like this. So you put in the Jacobian matrix, the matrix of derivatives of one set of parameters with respect to the other. Now, I have the proof written out in the notes. The proof is not a one-liner. There's some cancellations that happen. Yes?
For the...
Oh, yeah, thanks. Thanks for catching all my Blackboard errors. I think I might just omit the proof in class. It's not hard, but it's not a one-liner. You might recognize this rule as being more or less the same rule for transforming the metric in general relativity. If I change coordinates in general relativity, the metric transforms by the same rule. You can think of the Fisher matrix as being like a metric on the model space. This is something I want to elaborate on. Let me make a few comments on this rule first. So the rule applies. Reparameterization just means that the parameters, maybe I should have written it as theta prime goes to theta. That the parameters in the original model theta are functions of theta prime. And the rule holds for a reparameterization or a situation where there are fewer variables theta prime than there are thetas. In other words, instead of reparameterizing the whole space, I'm just parameterizing a submodel. As an example, suppose that you were to construct a submodel by simply removing some parameters from the space. Then this rule would just say that the Fisher matrices are related by, for example, let's say that I have the six-parameter model and I want to, when I remove parameters from the space, what I really mean is that I'm fixing some of the parameters to their fiducial values. So if I have my 6x6 Fisher matrix, and I want to assume that one of the parameters, say tau, is fixed, that I know it, I have a prior on it, I don't have to redo the forecast in the smaller 5-parameter space. I just take the appropriate 5x5 submatrix of the Fisher matrix. So this rule that was stated over here, that the way that you prior out parameters or fix them is by dropping rows and columns from the Fisher matrix. Not the inverse. You drop the rows and columns before you invert it. Is a special case of this rule. Here's another fun special case of this rule. Suppose we're thinking about we thought about the CMB Fisher matrix. As a situation where we have some cosmological parameters, and then those determine the statistics of the data. But really the way it worked is this was a two-step process where the cosmological parameters determine the power spectrum by running CAM or class, and then the power spectrum determines the statistics of the ALMs. So you could think of this as being a submodel. What we're really talking about is a submodel. One model space I could consider is just the model space in which every CL is an independent parameter and there's no physics. And then the 6-parameter space that I'm interested in, so this is a model with like 2,000 parameters if my CMB experiment goes to Lmax equals 2,000. No, I'm not interested in that model with 2,000 independent parameters, one parameter for every CL. I'm really interested in a 6-parameter submodel. Let's see what happens when we apply the rule in that case. So the Fisher matrix in the big model would be a 2,000 by 2,000 matrix with one row and column for every L. The Fisher matrix in that space, you can actually write down without doing much calculation. It is this. Because if I think of each CL as an independent parameter, well, they're all statistically independent. They're not correlated with each other because each ALM is independent. So the Fisher matrix is a diagonal matrix. And then the matrix elements on the diagonal are just given by, that's the same question as asking, what is the Fisher matrix for estimating the variance of a Gaussian with 2L plus 1 samples? So if you, that was kind of a hand-wavy derivation, but that's how you get from our example of the 1D Gaussian to the Fisher matrix in this space. And then if I apply this general rule, it would say that the Fisher matrix in my 6-parameter cosmological space is given by, let's see, I just sum over LL prime. I put in the Jacobian, that is to say the derivative of CL with respect to the derivative of one set of parameters with respect to the other. And then I put in FLL prime. And then if I use the delta function to do the sum, the double sum becomes a single sum. And I get the expression for the CMB Fisher matrix that I had before. So there's a consistency between this formula that we found before and this general rule. Okay, so we're building up some mathematical properties of the Fisher matrix that I'm almost done with, but it's 11:15 and I'm not quite done. So we'll wrap up tomorrow, and then my plan is to move on to the next topic, which is not statistics, but some physics.